When you're looking at, like, say, a good protein source, you're trying to evaluate, why did I say Greek yogurt is good? Or why would I say that whey protein isolate, the most ideal protein powder? It is because in these protein sources, there's a larger proportion of essential amino acids, like almost half is essential amino acids, and about half is the non-essential. Whereas in some protein sources, maybe only like 20% is essential amino acids and 80% is the non-essential that you don't need as much. But also in these animal products, they tend to be higher in leucine, isoleucine, valine. And when you have those higher amounts of those in a protein source, they promote more new protein synthesis than a protein that doesn't have that.
I'm Doug Bopes, personal trainer, best-selling author, and entrepreneur, and I'm on a mission to help others become the best version of themselves. So I'd like to welcome you to the Adversity Advantage podcast, where we will help you use obstacles, failures, and setbacks to give you that edge needed for success. I'll be interviewing people from all walks of life on how they overcame trials and turned them into triumphs. So please, sit back, relax, and get ready to be absolutely blown away by some of the wisdom and stories you're about to hear. Welcome back to another episode of The Adversity Advantage. I'm your host, Doug Bopst, and today's guest is Angelo Keeley. Angelo is the co-founder and CEO of Keon, an active lifestyle, supplement, and functional food company dedicated to helping people fully experience a fun and active life by providing pure, energy-enhancing solutions. Today on the show, we discuss what the science actually says about amino acids and why they are beneficial, how to tell if a protein powder is made well, what to look for when buying amino acid supplements, what amino acids are and why they are so important for muscle growth, the top whole foods you must eat in order to increase your protein intake, why protein is so important for building muscle and losing body fat, and so much more. Full disclosure, I have a financial relationship with Keon. This doesn't change the integrity of this episode, and the information in it is still very valuable, and I think you will really enjoy it. So with that said, let's get this conversation going, and welcome Angelo Keeley to the Adversity Advantage podcast. Angelo, welcome to the podcast.
Doug, thanks for having me, man.
You got it. I'd love to jump right in with the million-dollar question, and one that's been answered on this podcast before, but I would love your perspective on it. Why is protein so important when it comes to building muscle and losing fat?
The best way I like to answer this question is to contextualize it with the other macros. So when I say macros, I mean macronutrients, and those are carbohydrates, fat, and protein. The primary role of carbohydrates and fat are to be converted into energy that our body can burn to function. That's like to do all the normal stuff, to literally beat our heart, to breathe, but also to move through space, to pick up things, etc. Fats are also used for like building cells, etc. But the primary role of carbs and fat are literally for energy. The primary role of protein is fundamentally different. The primary reason that we eat protein in our diet, imagine we're like a house. So if we're a house, we buy natural gas or electricity via an electric grid that could be burned from coal, et cetera, to then like run the lights in our house. That's what carbs and fats are. In our house, though, like over time, anyone who's been a homeowner, or maybe if you're a renter, you've noticed like the roof doesn't last forever. You gotta like, maybe the toilet breaks, like things start to break in your house and you have to replace them and rebuild them. That's why we eat protein for our body, because our bodies are actually made up of proteins. Over half of our total physical mass, that's not like water, solid mass, is made up of proteins. So that includes all of our vital organs, our skin, our hair, our nails, our eyes, all of our muscle, but also even things like our neurotransmitters and hormones and enzymes. So all these proteins in our body are in a constant state of turnover. They only live or last so long, you might say, and they start to break down. And they're happening at all different speeds throughout all different places of the body. And when a protein gets old, it basically breaks down into these little unique amino acids. The old amino acids that can't get used anymore, you pee them out. And the ones that you can still use, you reuse them to build new proteins. But here's the deal. If you just peed out, say, half of the old amino acids you can't use anymore, where do you get the new amino acids from to rebuild heart tissue, to rebuild your muscles, to rebuild hormones, all these things? You have to eat protein outside of your body. You have to consume it, whether it's plant-based or animal, or whatever. You eat that protein. You break it down in your digestive system. You get the amino acids. They go into your blood, and then they get distributed throughout your body to help to build new proteins. Now, your main question was like, so what about like build muscle and lose fat, right? So one really important thing to know about muscle is the role of muscle is not simply to help you look cut or be toned or to lift heavy things. Well, that's one of the things it does. It's also a reservoir of amino acids for the rest of your body. So if you don't eat protein for an extended amount of time, I'm saying like a few hours, but you wouldn't notice it in a few hours. But if you don't eat protein or amino acids for a few hours, what happens is you start to go into basically a net protein negative balance. You haven't digested and eaten enough protein and amino acids to help rebuild the proteins throughout your body. So what your body does is it literally starts to break down the muscle tissue. The muscle is the reservoir. It breaks down the muscle tissue. You get the amino acids and you can use it for the rest of your body. So bottom line, if you're not consuming enough protein on a regular basis, then your body will prioritize breaking down muscle tissue to supply the rest of the body with the amino acids it needs. So that's like, you just need to generally get that. Then if the question is like, well, I want to build more muscle, like how do I build more muscle? Well, I just told you or just talked about, right, that like protein is the fundamental material building block to help build new proteins and build new muscle in your body. The primary way that most people know about how to build muscle is you need some kind of stimulus. So typically it'd be like lifting weights. I'm going to lift weights. I've got the stimulus. It communicates to my body like, hey, let's build new proteins. Let's break down some of the old ones. Let's build new ones. Let's really improve the quality of this, say this muscle tissue. I'm doing dumbbell curls, like improve the muscle tissue of these muscle fibers at the location of my biceps. And depending on what kind of training you're doing, you could do it to where it really tries to provoke it to get even bigger, to grow more, et cetera. But you have to eat the protein that stimulus can then use to build up that muscle and make it bigger. So in doing all that, when you build up muscle, what happens is it increases your overall metabolism, because when you have more muscle, basically there's more caloric requirements to help maintain that muscle, right? So naturally, if you have more muscle, it's going to be easier to stay leaner because you can actually consume more food because you need more food. But on top of that, muscle is also the primary thing that, like, when you eat carbs, it's what absorbs all that glucose, or it tries to absorb the glucose. So you have more muscle, you're able to absorb more of that glucose. And overall, it helps regulate your blood sugar. And as we age, and basically as we age, right, the more muscle mass that you have is a very clear predictor of how long you will live, because it helps maintain activity levels, it helps regulate your blood sugar, it helps you avoid injury. And if in some, likely situation that we'll all go through, you're going to get sick, or you're going to fall down, you're going to get hurt or something, like I just described, that muscle is the reservoir of amino acids for the rest of your body. And so that's why you really want to maintain that lean muscle, so that when those things happen, you actually have muscle that the rest of your body can live off of to help support the rest of your body. So maybe I went in too many directions on that, but that's the big story of like protein and muscle. I guess I didn't answer your fat loss question maybe like tightly enough, but I could.
We can get into that in a bit. I mean, I think there's a couple different directions I could go. We'll get into amino acids in a minute. I think first, if the main thing you're saying is that people need to be getting adequate amounts of protein, a lot of times people will say, well, what does that mean? Like, what if I don't, does that mean I just eat more chicken? Does that mean I just eat more fish? Does that mean I just eat more steak? Does that mean I eat more tofu? Like, does that mean that I just have to eat more protein bars? Like, whatever the thoughts are that are going through their minds. If you were just starting from scratch and wanting to get more protein into your diet, and you were busy with your family and everything, what would be some of the top whole foods you would include into your diet every single day to increase your protein intake?
Lean animal proteins. So that would be things like lean meats and fish and eggs, dairy products, things like Greek yogurt is really awesome, super high in protein and lower in fat. Those are really like the standouts. If you were trying to follow a more plant-based diet, the proteins that are the most complete and digestible would be things like soy, quinoa, buckwheat. Those are really like the standouts. You could also do different types of like legumes and, mixed with different types of rices. I think the one thing on the plant side, if you go in the plant direction, outside of things like soy and buckwheat, quinoa, you need to do more protein combining, mixing different types of plant sources together so you get a complete profile. But I think it's not that complicated. It's like really good fish, chicken, beef, Greek yogurt.
And generally speaking, I've heard like as long as you hit the total protein requirement, I think, I forget the exact number, whether it's, I think it's like what, 1.6, 1.8 kilograms per pound of body weight. It doesn't necessarily matter where your protein comes from. Have you heard that as well?
Here's what I'd say. Like, people are going to have all different types of positions and views on this, and there's a lot of different studies. Here's what I'd say. You can follow a plant-based diet and you can get sufficient essential amino acids, which are the things you're trying to get from the protein, in order to meet good, healthy, robust, optimal living daily protein requirements. If it's really the exact same amount, I'm not totally on board with that, because I think it depends on how old you are, what kind of training you do, if you're in any kind of like maintenance mode or you're trying to lose fat, and how you're maybe trying to optimize your diet. But I think in general, if you just keep it really simple, what I would say is like, well, I'll make it really simple. If you're eating like a gram of good quality complete protein per pound of body weight, and you're under 40 years old, and you do resistance training, like, you're living good, man. You're doing great. Like, you don't have to eat animal proteins if you don't want to, and you're eating within like a good amount of daily calories, you know? I mean, you're probably pretty disciplined if you're on the plant side, because those proteins come with a lot more carbs typically. But yeah, you're living a good life. I wouldn't say that like they're just totally equal though. I think that they have different impacts on the body, and what age you are, they can have different impacts. So I would say it's more nuanced than that.
And I think the reason you're saying it's nuanced is because it depends on the quality of the protein, and the quality of the protein is dependent upon the amino acid profile in the whole food source.
Man, I would say that becomes more important if you have certain types of goals. If you have really aggressive performance goals, or really aggressive weight loss, or specific weight loss goals, or you're older, the older you get, the more I would say that protein quality changes, which is how many essential amino acids are in the protein, what proportion are they, how digestible are they, and how are you eating them? Those things start to matter more the more that you are, you're older. You got really intense, you know, fitness performance goals, or you've got weight loss goals.
So let's talk about amino acids and talk about like why they're so important for our body and not just for what it does to what they do for building muscle.
So just to clarify, protein is made up of these things called amino acids. There's 20 of them, dietary protein amino acids. And they, of those, 9 we define as essential and 11 as non-essential. The big idea of the essential definition is that those are the 9 that your body can't make. You can actually use the other 9 kind of as like the raw ingredients to build and synthesize the other 11 within your own body. But the other thing about these 9 that makes them really important is that they are the, what I'd like to say is the active ingredient or the active component of the protein that even outside of resistance training will stimulate muscle protein synthesis. So lots of people think I have to train. You can actually stimulate muscle protein synthesis or enhance muscle protein synthesis via just the essential amino acids themselves. And maybe I'll get back to your question, but more generally, like, they also promote whole body protein synthesis. When you consume them, that communicates the whole body to help rebuilding all of these proteins. So that's like what the essential amino acids are in general. And was the core of your question is like, how, you know, why are they important outside of just muscle?
Yeah, like, why are they important for our body outside of just building muscle?
Yeah, so I think, you know, like I did a brief overview of before, we ideally want to be having improved turnover to improve the quality of the proteins throughout our body, whether that's in our organs, organ tissue, or that's our skin, or that's our hair, et cetera. And we also need sufficient essential amino acids just on a daily basis to just maintain the function of all these different parts of our body, as well as literally hormones being made from amino acids and neurotransmitters, the chemicals in our brain through which we conduct emotions, et cetera, are amino acids themselves or the metabolites of amino acids. So it's not just muscle. It's basically like largely the definition of what like makes us a living being is this nitrogen, getting a little nerdy, but the nitrogen component of amino acids is like what creates life. So all these functions, immune system, hormones, brain chemistry, it's all being fueled by these amino acids.
one of the amino acids we hear a lot about, especially when it comes to like building muscle, is leucine. Talk about why leucine is so important and we need to make sure that it's in our diet if we're looking to do all these things we're talking about, like increase muscle mass, lose fat, increase longevity.
I'd actually say it's a little bit more nuanced than that. It's not just leucine that's important. You really need the other eight as well. And this has actually been one of the issues that has maybe misdirected us and led to things like a very big popularization of BCAA supplements, branched chain amino acid supplements, which are primarily leucine, which is the lead branched chain amino acid, and the other two, isoleucine and valine. So, and now I just want to contextualize that and then I'll describe, but like, why is it important? Like say 40 years ago, it's longer than that, but 40 years ago, we really started to uncover like, wow, in protein that we eat, there's this one major amino acid, a branch chain called leucine, that seems like it's like, we'll call it the quarterback of the essential amino acids. It's the one that leads the team of all the amino acids. It's the one that actually kickstarts the process and says like, hey, let's build new proteins. But then we realize you really need these other two also, the isoleucine and the valine. And if you don't have those other two, then the process won't kickstart. But then what we started to uncover more and more, and this is especially over the last 20 years, and this is why we now know BCAAs alone, if you only take those three, it's a waste. It's a waste of your money. Is that you have to then have the other six essential amino acids. You have to have the whole team. You can't just have the quarterback, right? And two other guys. You got to have all nine players together that can contribute to being on this team. So leucine is very important. It plays this very key role in actually activating mTOR and saying like, hey, let's grow, let's build new proteins, but you have to have the other eight in support. So I was going to say, when you're looking at like, say, a good protein source, you're trying to evaluate, you know, why did I say Greek yogurt is good? Or why would I say that whey protein isolate, you know, is like the most ideal protein powder? It is because in these protein sources, there's a larger proportion of essential amino acids, like almost half is essential amino acids, and about half is the non-essential. Whereas in some protein sources, maybe only like 20% is essential amino acids and 80% is the non-essential that you don't need as much. So first of all, you got 50%, that's good. But also in these animal products, they tend to be higher in leucine, isoleucine, valine. And when you have those higher amounts of those in a protein source, they promote more new protein synthesis than a protein that doesn't have that.
So a lot of times when people are trying to get more protein in their diet, is you brought up like whey protein, there's whey protein isolate, there's whey protein concentrate, there's casein, there's all these different types of protein powder. And a lot of times when people are trying to get more protein in their diet, they just go for the protein powder. Talk a bit about like who should do that and who shouldn't do that and the importance of like the nuance of all that, because some of these protein supplements can be amazing. You're then not getting some of the micronutrients that you would get from, you know, whole food protein sources.
I think that's really like the key point. What I would say is I would encourage everyone to think about their diet being based on at least three really solid whole food meals per day. If you want to interpret that differently, like, no, I want to fast for the first half of the day, then I want to eat two, whatever. You want to eat four or five. But like, think like, I'm going to at least eat like three whole food meals per day. And that I'm not only thinking about protein. I'm not only thinking about like the quality of the protein in the meal. I'm also thinking about other micronutrients, minerals and vitamins, things that come from vegetables and fruits and from whole meat sources themselves, as well as things like fiber that comes from the vegetables, et cetera. And because it's not only protein. It's like if you just worship the protein as like the only thing that matters in your diet, then you could be led astray because there's a lot going on in our bodies and it's not only that. That said, I think for a lot of people, if you want to hit higher daily protein requirements, earlier I was quoting like a gram per pound of body weight. The recommended daily allowance, which is really the minimum to not have significant health problems, is 0.4 grams per pound of body weight. So that's less than half what I was advocating for. What I would say is like, don't ever go below like that 0.4, 0.5 of like real food in real meals. So if you weigh, you know, 200 pounds, eat at least 100 grams of protein per day. And that could be, you know, 30 to 35 grams of protein three times a day. But it could also be maybe 50 grams of protein three times a day. And you hit 150 grams of protein throughout the day of actual real food. And that's because you really thought about it. You made sure you got in, but that's like a lot of eggs in the morning, right? Or that's a lot of eggs and sausage, or it's a lot of chicken at lunch. It could still be quite a bit. So try to hit somewhere, you know, between the 0.5, I would say at least 0.5 per pound of body weight. And then the rest that you're trying to get to if you want to use something like protein powders or you want to use essential amino acid supplements, that's when it can be really effective because it helps you to hit those higher daily requirements without a bunch more calories and in a much easier format and could really help you to hit those higher goals, but without being at odds with the needs to get other micronutrients in through your diet as well.
So for the average person, let's just say somebody's going to the gym a few days a week. They're just going because they want to build some muscle. They want to lose some weight. They want to just kind of do the thing to make sure they're staying active. That demographic of people taking a supplement like whey protein or essential amino acids isn't as necessary as somebody who is either much older or has like much higher performance goals, right?
I think that's accurate. I mean, I think it's difficult to say because you're painting a picture of a person, right? That like is going to the gym a few times a week. They kind of want to do this. I'm like, well, like, you know, how dedicated on their diet? How much do they really want it? I mean, I think for that person, I think it's actually reasonable for them to choose to supplement a couple times a day, to eat three really good whole food meals and to supplement a couple times a day. I mean, they're choosing to invest more in their health, right? And like, is that worth it? Like you're having to pay money, right? To like, to get these additional supplements, to improve your health and like to this degree. Whereas if I am, you know, like really committed to either I'm training for a race or I'm training for a jiu-jitsu competition or I'm training for something and I want to like do it really well. I'm like a novice athlete even or an amateur athlete. I might be like that much more dedicated to really try to get in good shape. Or maybe I'm trying to get ready for a party or a wedding or something and I want to like drop this last 10 pounds of fat. Like in those cases, it would be easier to choose to use a supplement. So I think, you know, there are opportunities for someone to do that. I think though, like, if you're in maintenance, what I would say is it's not required. You don't have to use supplements. I think they're a tool that can make it easier. In some ways, they can be very much actually more effective than a whole food protein. It's like choosing when and how to use that. And I can go more into that. Like, what do you mean more effective than a whole food protein? Because it's actually pretty profound.
Yeah. So why is it more effective than a whole food protein with some of the stuff you're talking about?
When we talk about these protein sources, like one of the roles that they provide is to be the building blocks of the new protein in your body. Let's just talk muscle, right? So like I go to the gym, I lift weights, and then I eat protein afterwards. The lifting of the weights was the primary stimulus to tell my body to help rebuild my muscles. And then the protein is just the building block for it. But what a lot of people don't realize is that in the protein itself, depending on the quality of the protein and how you eat it and how isolated it is, it on its own provides a stimulus. So I'll give you an example of that. 70 grams of steak as part of a mixed meal. So I'm talking like I'm eating it with broccoli and potatoes. Or just 30 grams of steak, but eaten on its own, will provide the same amount of muscle protein synthesis. They will stimulate the same amount. And that's because the 30 grams of steak eaten on its own, it's digested alone. The amino acids are more immediately bioavailable to the blood and are more available to the muscle. So they actually like tell the body to build more new proteins, to build new muscle, even outside of having to have that training. Now, if I just did a big training session, I'm gonna use the steak that I ate. It's not like I'm not going to use the 70 grams of steak that I ate in the meal, but the steak on its own is going to provide more. Now, listen to this. Just 10 grams, like 10 to 12 grams of whey protein will provide the same muscle protein synthesis as that 70 grams of steak as part of a meal. So it's like, I think it's 10.8 grams in the study. So it's like six times the amount of muscle protein synthesis, gram for gram. Then if you go all the way down to essential amino acids, just 3 grams of something like essential amino acids in an older population, it's six times as much as the whey protein. And in a younger population, it's still three times the impact. You could literally have 1/3 the amount of essential amino acids pure. Because there's no other non-essential amino acids in it. It's immediately bioavailable. It stimulates this increased amount of protein synthesis. That is the equivalent of like way, 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 way more steak. So when you understand that, then you can start to see why, hey, so like I eat pretty healthy. I'm going to the gym. I'm trying to build muscle. I'm pretty happy with the results. I eat really clean. Like, I don't really get that sore after. Like, I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing. I'm like, I don't know that I would say, hey, you need to really add all this protein powder and these essential amino acids to do all this stuff. But if you're going to the gym, you're like, man, I feel like I'm kind of plateaued. Like, I want to try to build more muscle when I go, or I'm having recovery issues. Consuming essential amino acids before you train will absolutely produce a much greater increase in total muscle protein synthesis than consuming whey protein before or by eating meat before, et cetera, because when it hits the blood and then combines with the resistance training, it creates this even greater muscle protein synthesis. It also helps to contribute to less muscle protein breakdown, so you're going to get less sore. So if you're trying to optimize in that way, it's going to do something that you can't, steak will not do that same thing. The essential amino acid supplement will, because of its unique format and that it's only essential amino acids and it's so highly bioavailable. Similarly, if you're trying to lose weight, you really want to lose 10 pounds of fat, but you want to maintain your muscle. If you go into a caloric deficit and you give your body less total calories than it wants in a day to maintain its current weight, it will start to prioritize to use amino acids in the protein as an energy source instead of just as a way to maintain your muscle. And that's why it's been shown in recent studies that simply a 30% reduction in caloric intake. So I'm like a 200-pound guy. I like lifting weights. I exercise a lot. My daily caloric intake is probably about like 3,000 calories. If I cut that by 900 calories to 2,100 calories, because I want to get like cut, you know, I don't want to have any fat on my belly. I'm going to get out of my dad mode, right? I would have to increase my daily essential amino acid intake 300%. That's like three times the amount of protein I'm eating right now. I can't eat three. I mean, that'd be ridiculous. That'd be like so many grams of protein. But I could take a much smaller amount of essential amino acids, like a tenth of that, like three times, well, not a tenth of that, but at least half or a third of that, like two or three times a day during that phase when I'm trying to lose that 10 pounds. And it's going to make it much easier to maintain all of my muscle mass and only lose fat. And a perfect example of that is even like a guy in my office who over 3 months lost 25 pounds of fat and lost no muscle mass without doing resistance training. But by cutting calories and ensuring he had optimal protein intake and consuming amino acids during the day. So the big idea is like thinking about things like protein powder or especially essential amino acids, which are like, I would just think essential amino acids are like super protein powder. They're like, you know, they're like protein powder times three. They're so much more concentrated and powerful as a supplement that you can use to hit fat loss goals, to improve recovery or improve muscle mass in the gym in a way that you can't get from protein, and or, you know, as we can get more into talking about aging, like overcome the anabolic resistance from aging that, again, just eating more protein won't really help with.
Does the same framework still apply here where you're saying, okay, like supplement with essential amino acids and or whey protein. However, make sure you're still eating the three whole food meals so that you're making sure you're getting all the vitamins, minerals, micronutrients, et cetera, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would never, I mean, unless you're like under the clinical supervision of some kind of, I mean, you're like morbidly obese and you've got some kind of like super clinical situation where it's like, no, the priority is like, we have to drop hundreds of pounds of fat and like, that's the top priority. But in that case, I mean, you're probably like taking, I don't even know. I haven't worked with that kind of like clinical population before, but yeah, I mean, in general, like eat real food a few times per day and try to eat as clean as you can and eat well-rounded and then think about how supplements fill in the gaps.
People are often skeptical of this stuff, right? Because people have been burned before by supplement companies. People have been burned before by just buying stuff at random stores. Talk about the ISSN study with essential amino acids and kind of what that showed and what may actually surprise some people.
ISSN stands for the International Society of Sports Nutrition. And it is a group of academic researchers from around the world. These are PhDs that are tenured professors and researchers at like basically all the universities around the world. And they study things around sports nutrition. So they're studying protein powders and creatine and BCAAs and essential amino acids and HMB and like every kind of, you know, supplement that you can imagine, but also in conjunction with exercise physiology. And what's cool about this group is that they think diversely. Like a lot of them are like researching different kinds of things, you know, like that one person's really into creatine or this group is, another group is into essential amino acids or protein, et cetera. And like, if anyone's familiar with academia, like people are trying to develop their own career and they pursue a line of interest. But then to be part of this society and to get these position papers published, you have to get a lot of people to review all the research. So they have published one on creatine, and like the ISSN, they'll also publish and they'll say like, hey, which supplements are actually worth it? And there's like legit science behind them. A few of them are creatine, whey protein, essential amino acids. Like those are like, you know, HMB is one as well. Like there's very few. Some other surprising ones that are like sodium bicarbonate, like baking soda. Like there are unique things in there that are hard to like popularize and make money off of. So you might not have heard of them as like a supplement. But what I like about this group is that someone can say they're not biased. I don't believe that ever. Everyone's biased. Everyone was born in a certain body and a family and a life and has some kind of careers doing something. But what's cool about this group is it's a lot of them holding each other accountable. So it's not just like the one guy who's, been paid by this group to do a bunch of studies. There's a lot of accountability. And this report came out in October of 2023. It's very comprehensive. It cites over, I think it's like 130 studies. And just for reference, their creatine paper cited like 100 studies. So when people say like, creatine is the most studied ever, it is. Creatine is very highly studied. Something like essential amino acids is very robustly studied as well. And in this, they basically just review what all of the studies have shown over the last 20 years, especially. And it's an awesome paper. If you really like digging into this stuff, I highly recommend it. And what they break down is a lot of the stuff that I've been speaking to here that I think is kind of surprising to people. They speak to the study, not just multiple studies, but it basically have shown how much more impactful essential amino acids are than protein to the degree of over six times as impactful. That was for a slightly older group. That was 60-year-olds. So in 60-year-olds, 3 grams of essential amino acids is worth 20 grams of whey protein. Other studies where they simply give these participants 7.5 grams of essential amino acids twice a day, and over the course of 3 months, they build many pounds more of muscle, like 10 pounds of muscle. This is an older demographic that's more anabolically resistant, but they also show amazing recovery in younger adults. They show, they basically just highlight a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about, but rather than like, us meandering through the different topics, it's a comprehensive review. So anyone is into it, I think, or is listening to this and be like, really, is that true? What are you talking about? Like, go to that study. That's that position paper. It's a great place to start. And from there, you will do a deep dive into basically, what the science on protein nutrition and essential amino acid nutrition is today.
So speaking of essential amino acids, I've been using Keon for a while. I'm a fan of it. I've been connected to the company for a long time. I'm curious to hear from your perspective, given that you are the one that's behind all this, like just giving me an unbiased view on what people should look for. Let's just say, I'm not ready to invest in Keon, but I want to invest in an essential amino acid company. And I want to prove this right before like buying Keon. What should they look for?
So if you're looking for an essential amino acid supplement, the first thing that you want to do is you want to find one that definitely has all 9 essential amino acids. So that would basically take off the table like purely branched chain amino acid products, one that only has the 3. It would also take off the table any companies that advertise essential amino acids, but they only include 8. And there's actually a lot in the space marketing that MAP formula, but it's been debunked a really long time. It's a study from the 80s, 90s, sorry. All the most recent studies basically show all 9. Then the question is, okay, what's like the proportions of them? So that'd be the next thing. Make sure they tell you how much of each amino acid is in the formula. Lots of brands for amino acids will just say proprietary formula. So they might say 5 grams of amino acids, but then it'll say proprietary and it'll just list them out. And so you don't know how much leucine, how much isoleucine, how much valine, how much tryptophan. And it really does matter. So the next thing would be is to look for proportions, and I'm getting a little nerdy here, but look for proportions that reflect what I'm about to say. The ideal essential amino acid formula, specifically to promote whole body protein synthesis and muscle protein synthesis and overcome any kind of anabolic resistance, you start with the proportions of amino acids as they exist in human skeletal muscle. So literally, if you were to like do a biopsy of my muscle, which amino acids are in it and how much? And there's certain proportions of them. Then what we've seen through multiple studies, and these are like what they call stable isotope tracer studies. They actually like detect exactly how much of the amino acid goes into the muscle and can detect exactly how much muscle protein synthesis is generated. You then need to increase the amount of leucine to where it becomes 40% of the formula. and then increase the other two branched chain amino acids, the isoleucine and the valine, to where they match the original proportions, and increase the amount of lysine because it's basically slower to get into the muscle. That final formula is what you will see published on the back of, you don't need to buy the Keon product, but if you look at the back of the bottle, it's those proportions relative to each other. You want to find that. The next thing I would say is, and so if there's like a bunch more tryptophan in it, or a bunch more, you'll see tryptophan's very low. The tryptophan number can be very low. Or if the leucine's much lower than that, like don't waste your time with it. The next thing I'd say is like, you don't need other amino acids for the benefits of the of an essential amino acid complex like this. So if they're adding in taurine or arginine or a bunch of other stuff, like you don't need them. If you're really interested in those for some other reason, you could consider it, but I wouldn't advise it without researching it more. And then I think the last thing is just like, is a pretty clean label after that? Like when you look at the other ingredients, is there a like a big list of other weird stuff or is it pretty straightforward and simple what's in it? They can use clean excipients, something like a rice flour concentrate, which basically is like, it's very, very tiny, tiny little bit of rice flour that helps the amino acids like move through the machine so you can get into a capsule or get into a tub or something like that, because they tend to be kind of sticky. And otherwise, like some flavors and whatever sweetener you kind of approve of, or if you're getting capsules, you don't need any of that stuff. And there shouldn't be anything else in it. So I think if you can find that, that looks pretty clean. And then I guess the only other thing is you can get amino acids either from a plant-based source or from a non-plant-based source. If it's non-plant-based, FYI, like maybe you're not vegan, like you don't care. I'm not vegan, so I wouldn't necessarily care that it came from a plant source, but they can come from like duck feathers or even like human hair or some other kind of gross things. You can imagine they're not going to be like breaking down expensive meat tissue to create some kind of supplement. Whereas in the plant-based way, it's actually via fermentation. So it's much more cost effective and cleaner, et cetera. So if you do care about that, I vote for going for the plant-based. I think it's a much cleaner, better supplement.
So we covered the essential amino acids part. Talk about protein. There's so many companies that make protein powders. There's so much garbage out there. I have honestly, and I say this and my audience might get mad at me, I have always kind of gone back and forth between like the cleanest one, then I'll get one that has a bunch of garbage in it just because I'm like, oh, I like the taste of this. It tastes kind of like a dessert. So I'm just being honest.
I like it, man. It's good.
But for the sake of this conversation, and if somebody's listening to this, like, all right, like the trade-off, there's trade-offs in everything. And some of the trade-offs in some of these protein powders that are super clean is it tastes like complete crap. They're unflavored. There's like not a lot in it, and it just tastes blah. And for people who are trying to go from eating a diet full of ultra processed foods to less ultra processed foods, drinking a protein powder that's like flavorless is sometimes like impossible. How can people meet themselves like somewhere in the middle on that?
Man, I heard two questions in that. One, I heard it's like, how do you evaluate protein powders? And then what about just this overall challenge of like trying to make healthier decisions? And you know kind of what you want to do, but you're so far on one end of the spectrum that it's like, how do you get there? And, you know, what's a good decision? What I would just say is like, don't try to be perfect. Just take the next step. Like, just take the next step today that's a little bit in that direction. Don't let great be the enemy of good or perfect be the enemy of good. Like, just like try to just make the next decision. So if you don't have the money, or you don't have access and it's just easier for you to get whatever, like, I don't know, the super cheap, artificially flavored, whatever protein that's like local in the Walmart next to you, it's like, do that, like, and make that decision to have that thing maybe instead of like having a cookie in the afternoon. You know, like I would say like, that's a good trade, right? So yeah, I think just like, don't try to be perfect about it. Like, just try to make small decisions in the right direction. Now that said, talking about protein powders, what I would say is if you are going to invest your money in a protein powder and you want it to be effective and you don't want to spend tons of time researching, like what's the best thing, I would just say start with whey protein isolate. The reason why is because whey protein isolate, out of all the protein powders, pretty much has the best composition of amino acids. You could go back and forth and argue, but like casein has a slower release and blah, like going to all these arguments. But for most people, like what's available in your local store, whatever you're doing, a whey protein isolate has higher levels of the BCAAs. It's a higher amount of total essential amino acids. And the thing about it is they actually cut out the isolate process. It's like a cold filtering process. You remove the fats and you remove the carbs, which removes the lactose. So even people that are kind of lactose intolerant, I'm a little lactose intolerant, don't have any reaction to whey protein isolate. So it's very effective. It's widely available. Then like if you're willing to invest that much more in your health, I think looking for a good, clean, quality brand. And I think there's a lot of different ways of defining that. Like I can tell you like what we did in Keon and why we made the product we made. So I actually tasted like, I mean, I can't even tell you, Doug, like how many raw protein powders from different farms I tasted, like so many. And what happened to be was that the grass-fed whey protein isolate from one specific supplier was like the best. It tasted the best. It didn't have like a, you know, like a farmy taste, like a cow kind of like hoof, like kind of gross taste. It just tasted like milk, like delicious. And it did happen to be the more expensive raw ingredient. Like it was like, but I wasn't surprised, right? Okay, it's the best tasting one of like all the ones. And literally, we at Keon sell that as an unflavored powder. You can just buy the unflavored protein powder. And I can even give it to my kids and they think it tastes good. You know, if I can mix it in with milk or put it into baked good stuff, it doesn't taste gross at all. Really, I mean, it comes down to flavoring. It's like, again, like with our brand, and we are more of like a premium brand, so we may not be for everyone. We invested in like really nice flavors. And it's an organic natural flavor system. And it's not, you know, it's because it tastes really good and super clean. And then you don't have a bunch of other junk in it. It's basically like sweetener, organic natural flavor, and some salt. And this, honestly, dude, the salt really helps. Salt can make a protein powder taste way better. So if you buy a protein powder and it's like, it's like too sweet or something, and you're not sensitive to sodium, add a little bit of salt and it can make it taste a lot better. Yeah. So I guess that's like my overall advice on protein powders.
As far as timing of essential amino acids, one of the ways that I've used it is like if I'm fasting a little bit. And when I say fast, I mean my fast might be like 14, 16 hours at the most, you know? But what happens is I'm just busy in the mornings. I got clients or I'm just doing work and I don't really either have time or I'm just not as hungry for breakfast in the morning. And so I'll take some essential amino acids and I'll still feel like I kind of ate something. And even if I'm going to the gym, I still feel like I've got something in my system. Like, why is that?
That's a great question. So that's a great use of them. What I would say is anytime you fast, and it's normal and natural to fast, like every night, like to have dinner and then to not eat, you know, for 12 hours at least, right? Like that's a good normal function of the body. You're going to go into what we talked about earlier, like this net muscle protein breakdown, because you won't have sufficient amino acids to keep supplying the rest of the body with it. So you start breaking down muscle and your body, you know, like if you're really trying to optimize your body to maintain lean muscle and to burn fat, you ideally would consume during your waking hours amino acids as a supplement, as a protein powder, or as a food every few hours. If you did that, then you're kind of constantly nurturing the maintenance of your muscles and a metabolism that's prioritizing the muscles and prioritizing burning fat. Why that happens is because you literally are giving your body these amino acids that it needs, both to support brain function, like your neurotransmitters, to support your muscle function, to support all these things that it wants to maintain all of its functions. And so it does have this satiating effect as well, in a similar way to protein. The protein has a satiating effect because it targets these, also targets these hormones in the digestive tract that are basically satiated. So it's a great use case. I think just quick tips on like ways you can think about using essential amino acids specifically is in between meals, which is basically fasting periods, whether that's between dinner and breakfast, or it's between breakfast and lunch, or between lunch and dinner, instead of some other kind of like non-nutritive snack, right? Or some other kind of like not really ideal. Like you don't need one more cappuccino probably in the afternoon or coffee or whatever, right? It's like you could take some amino acids, you're going to feel a more elevated mood, better focus, and you're also going to be supporting your overall protein levels throughout the whole body. Another way it's interesting, and I think this is more for like older folks, but actually consuming essential amino acids with a meal create a stimulus that we talked about earlier for new protein synthesis. So it would actually ensure that the protein that you're eating is prioritized for whole body protein synthesis and new protein synthesis. It basically makes you better utilize the protein that you're eating. And that's why there's actually been quite a few studies combining EAAs, amino acids, with whey protein. And it makes the whey protein more effective than it is on its own. But it'd also be more effective with a meal. And then before training, it can be great. It'll reduce muscle fatigue, improve the overall amount of like muscle protein synthesis from the exercise itself. So you actually get more results from it, and it'll reduce, you know, recovery time, et cetera. Yeah, I think people are surprised by this. It's great before bed. I think because it says energy on it, people are like, oh, like, is it going to give me energy? It does. It's not like caffeine energy. It's amino acids that overall support energy production in the body. But basically, if you, you know, if you ideally probably try to eat dinner several hours before bed so that you, you know, are able to digest all your food and then sleep throughout the night without, you know, trying to digest your food, having amino acids one more time before bed will stimulate muscle protein synthesis one more time, right? And it'll support, again, this is kind of like a more optimized use case. This is, the other ones are like to support cravings, you know, to make sure you can power through the morning, to get more out of your meals. When I'm saying like before bed, it's probably more like if you're, you know, really trying to build muscle or lose fat, or you're an aging adult, or like you have a bit more of like a nuanced set of goals.
Let's talk about aging for a second, because you hear a lot about the importance of getting enough protein in your diet every single day, especially as you're aging. And it's because of the amino acids, and that a lot of times people, as they age, they're not eating as much food. They don't have a big of an appetite, their metabolism slowing down, like all the things. Talk about the importance of protein as you age and to help slow down the process of aging. And then also, how can essential amino acids be utilized to aid in that process as well?
An optimal amount of daily protein intake is going to ensure that you maintain your lean muscle mass and maybe even build it. Like some people, you can build more muscle in your 50s, 60s, 70s. People have done it before, and when they up their protein intake and they start lifting weights and they get really serious about their health. So it's not too late. The protein also, though, supports all these other protein functions in your body: hair, skin, nails, you know, neurotransmitter function, et cetera. And so those are all really good reasons to be trying to optimize your amount of daily protein intake. The thing about it is that, and I would just say it's more extreme, and I touched on it earlier, but as we get really old, our ability to stay active, and I don't just mean like run, I mean like walk, like walk around, going up and down stairs, go on a hike with your grandkids, just do things that are more active and stay involved in life, is really determined by how much muscle mass we have and how healthy that muscle mass is. Because it seems really easy now to maybe to get up and, you know, sit down in a chair, get up out of a chair. It could be much harder when you're older. And so by building and training and maintaining those muscles, you maintain your activity levels, and also you reduce your risk of things like falling down. And anyone who's been in relationship with older people know that a serious fall is very detrimental to the rest of their life. It could be like ruin the next 5 years of their life and make the next 5 years of life very painful and not great, you know, before they pass away. So maintaining healthy muscle function, activity levels is super important. So the challenge, though, is that as we age, two things happen. One is our ability to digest protein. So literally like the enzymatic function within our digestive tract to break down the proteins and to get the amino acids in out of them decreases in function. Secondarily, once those amino acids are available to our body, as we get older, less and less prioritizes stimulating new growth. And it makes sense. If you think about an older person, like you don't think about them getting bigger muscularly, looking younger, regrowing and looking fresher, right? It's like, because that's not what our body's up to. Our body's in the process of kind of decaying over time. And so what happens is it's a very natural process. It's not ideal, but there, many people are affected by sarcopenia, which is the reduction of muscle mass. It starts around age 40 over the next 40 years of your life. And it's very difficult to maintain that muscle as you age. And that's simply because we have this anabolic resistance. Like our body's just not prioritizing it. So ways that you can basically fight that and work to overcome it and maintain or even build muscle as you age is that much more seriously think about consuming protein or amino acids every 3 hours. If you do that, you're doing your best to try to contribute to stimulating new bouts of muscle protein synthesis. On top of that, just doing resistance training. Now, why essential amino acids can play a really special role in that, like, say, every 3 hours thing is because as you get older, your appetite typically goes away. Like, you lose more of your appetite. And it's that much harder to try to be eating like 150, 200 grams of protein a day. So a more efficient way of doing that would be, again, try to eat these three healthy meals, but maybe have 1, 2, 3 servings of essential amino acids in between those meals every few hours. And studies have shown very clearly in these older demographics that it can directly lead to increased muscle mass, pounds of muscle mass within a few months, without changing the resistance training protocols, without changing the rest of their diet. And, you know, I think one of the most just kind of groundbreaking studies around this is NASA study, a series of studies about 20 years ago, where they were trying to figure out how to help astronauts not lose muscle mass in space because there's no resistance training. And so, you know, they think about, I think, like band workouts and testosterone supplementation, et cetera, but they looked into nutrition. And they did a study where they had people at bed rest for 28 days on planet Earth, right? And they ate these three regular meals throughout the day. But then in addition to that, they consumed three servings, basically the equivalent of three servings of chion aminos, 6 times a day. And after 28 days, there was no net muscle loss. To lie in your bed, to not have any exercise, to do no resistance training, and to not lose any muscle after 28 days is remarkable. And that just paints the picture of how the stimulation of the protein synthesis purely from the essential amino acids themselves help to overcome that muscle loss. So again, if you're 25 years old and you're eating tons of protein and you're exercising a lot and you're happy with your results, it makes less sense. But the older that you get, the more that you're really trying to hold on to that muscle and build that muscle, any little edge you can get to try to maintain it through diet and through supplementation is something definitely worth paying attention to.
So for somebody who's listening to this, that's like, all right, like, I get it. Essential amino acids are important. Whey protein's important. Protein in general is important. I've heard it talked about on the show before. I'm still skeptical of these supplements. What's your message to them?
It's all good, man. So I'm pursuing my life to try to make products and ensure that my career is focused in such a way that I do something meaningful, that I make products that I actually believe in, that ones that I'm willing to take, that I think are based on real science, that are legit, that I have integrity with all the people I work with, that I take care of like our partners, that, you know, we do well by consumers, et cetera. And part of that is trying to, you know, come on to shows like this and offer education and talk about it in general and even present it in such a way where it's like, none of this is like, you don't have to do anything. You know, I'm trying to like share the information. So I think, you know, it's like, if you listen to this whole thing, if you got this far too, like you got all the way to the end. So you were curious enough and you're like, nah, you're like, that's, you know, that's BS or whatever. I'm like, I mean, it's all good. It's all good. If you're not quite there though, like you're still a little bit curious, I would just say research it more. I mean, I would say read the ISSM paper, you know, ask more questions about it. You know, I think look to the people who have really studied it. And I guess like on the product trial side, I mean, we have a 60-day money back guarantee. So you could try buying it. And if you don't like it, you take it, you know, take the product, try it for 60 days. If you're like, dude, I don't believe it. I got my in-body scan before, or and afterwards there was no difference, or I've been taking it and I don't really feel anything. And it's been a month. Like, just ask for your money back. I mean, that's what I would do. I would either try it, like actually give it a try and see what you think about it, and or research it more. Like that's what I would do if I was in your situation. Skeptic.
So I use the essential amino acids from Keon. We've talked about essential amino acids. We've talked about whey protein. If the skeptic that we're speaking to now, or anybody else that's listening, is like, all right, I like you, Angelo. You seem like a good dude. You seem like you're super smart. You've, you know, provided a lot of great value and information. I want to try something. What do you recommend they try first?
I mean, I typically point people to Keon aminos, to the essential amino acids, just because I think they're the best bang for the buck and the most efficient, effective way to support muscle protein synthesis. I think though, you know, they're like, it's fruit flavored, natural flavors, but it's fruit flavored powdered drinks. So it's like drinking, you know, like an electrolyte drink type thing. If you like that, then it would fit in with probably your lifestyle, or it comes in capsules. So if you're kind of more into that, that would work. If you're like, I don't really like capsules and I don't really like fruit flavored things, but you know, I'm into protein and I listen to your show and you know, like, I want to try your protein. Like, the protein's killer. Like, it's really good and it's an awesome product. I use it every day. You know, I mean, like, and there's all kinds of ways to use protein too. You can like make pancakes out of it, put it into baked goods, you know, add a little bit to yogurt to make that. Cause even like a little cup of yogurt, if it has 20 grams of protein, but you're trying to get like 40, adding a scoop of whey protein to it can maximize it. You can do the same thing though with Keon aminos. You can add a scoop of Keon aminos to your yogurt and it's going to supercharge it even more than the whey protein would. So I think those are two like really good tools that both fit the conversation that we've had today. And I think either one is good. And I mean, clearly I endorse both of them.
So for those listening, or if you're watching, you can go to getkeon.com/adversity and get yourself 20% off. If you want to try the aminos, if you want to try the protein, like I, you know, I'm really glad that you came on here, Angelo, because I mean, I know a bit about this stuff just through my background in training and nutrition and just from interviewing certain people on the podcast, but I don't know like a tenth as much as you know about this stuff. I mean, what you just provided is so valuable and I really appreciate you kind of taking the time to like, not just answer some of the questions that I had personally, some of the skeptic questions, just some of the research questions. I really appreciate it. I think the audience is going to get a lot of value out of this.
I love having these kinds of conversations, Doug. So I appreciate you for providing the platform and just for everything you do.
You got it, man.
Thanks, Doug.